Okay. Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone had a nice evening yesterday. Walked around, did some sightseeing. It was beautiful. The weather was very great, good, and it's going to be better today. So let me not say too much about the nice weather because we want you to attend, not go around sightseeing during the day. Okay. All right. So having said that, I do have a few housekeeping announcements that I need to make. So the first thing is that yesterday we had two tracks, right? Certification and general technology. Today we have three tracks. Today and tomorrow there are three tracks. And the user experiences the new track. It's on that room. I don't remember the number, but it's right across on the other side of the hallway. So be aware that there are three tracks today. And the second thing also I want to make sure everybody realizes is that some of the sessions are 50 minutes, and some sessions are 25 minutes. Although we try to put all 50 minutes in each of those, you know, have them parallelly running together, we were not always able to do that. So you need to pay a little bit more attention to the program to see if there are 225 minutes running in parallel with the 50 minutes that you are attending and you wanted to attend, you know, one part of the 25 minutes or something like that. So if you stay in this room for the 50 minutes, you won't realize that there's another 25-minute track going on somewhere else, another session, right? So that's what I'm trying to tell you. The other housekeeping things are that, you know, as you know, the exhibition hall is open today. So please go and visit them during the break. The sponsors make this event possible because of the funding that they provide us. So please go and visit those folks. The breaks will be at 10:40, 12:25, and then lunch. Breaks and lunches will be served in the exhibit areas. So that is from 2:14. So the breaks and lunches are here, not in the hallway like yesterday. Wi-Fi, as you know, is available, but there's a cost associated with it. So you're doing it inside the rooms, and then if you want free Wi-Fi, you need to go downstairs. It's all free. And for the cost and for the details on how to get to the paid Wi-Fi, page 7. And the conference book will tell you how to do that, right? And the slides and the audio presentation, audio, and that's not a professionally, you know, edited audio, but a raw audio will be provided as before at the end of the sessions. And I think there is on the program, there is a little note on how to get to that after the conference, right? And login information on page 7, apparently. This evening, there's wine and cheese, the reception area. Please do attend. And after that is the pay-it-yourself dine around Araba. Apparently, this is the first year that we are introducing that. All it means is you just sign up. We've already arranged with certain restaurants around the area to be able to accommodate a bunch of conference attendees. So you sign up and you choose one of those restaurants with your buddies and then go and everybody sits together and it's a big gala thing that you want to hang out with your friends or meet new friends. That's the way it is. It's a networking event. You pay it yourself. So it's not being sponsored by the conference or not being subsidized by the conference. Okay. All right. So let's do that. If you want, because they've made these pre-arranged the number of folks that they're going to expect or could expect, they would like you to register at the front desk so that if there is any particular restaurant has more demand, then they can call in or ask for arrange with the other restaurants if there's overcrowding. The last thing that I want to announce is that at the end of the conference, there will be a feedback session mail that comes to you. I know that I get a lot of feedback mails from every hotel and I ignore it, right? But please don't ignore this one. So because it helps us, we really read this feedback, right? We read those feedback and then use that as an input for the next conference. And we want to make things better for ourselves and for everybody attending. So please do take a few minutes and respond and submit your feedback on that, on the survey. All right, thank you very much. That is all I have for the announcements. Today, we start with general technology track again. And the first session is a 50-minute session. Please note. And it's on smartphone key stores compared. It's by William Supernov, right? Sorry. He's a CTO from Coolspan. And he's going to introduce himself a little bit and then do the presentation. Welcome.
Good morning. I am Bill Supernor with Coolspan. We are a Bethesda, Maryland-based maker of cross-platform secure voice and text communication products running on a number of the different operating systems that I'm going to talk about today. We also produce a microSD-based cryptographic token that can be used in these various devices, and we'll show where that fits in the whole scenario. So to give you an idea of what we're going to talk about, I'm going to get into some details of just what am I talking about when I talk about a key store, how can they be compared, what are some of the features that we may look at one compared to the other, talk about some specifics in the platforms, some gotchas, some tips. And then at the end, talk about some options that are not necessarily the phones themselves. Before I dive into that, of the folks in the audience, how many of you actually worked with a smartphone key store before? Okay, just a few. And of you, how many have worked with more than one? All right, so only a couple. You'll see certainly that it's a very diverse environment. There is no one-size-fits-all solution, and there is no write once, run everywhere. It's basically write everywhere. And it makes it a little bit tough to do the cross-platform development. So when I'm talking about a key store, I'm really only talking about the place where the keys are kept. You create a symmetric key, you create an asymmetric key, and you want to persist it on the device, or you want to import it from someplace else, you want to load it from a CA, you want to do something. Where is it put? How are you going to get it in there? In general, we don't want to have to import a key every time we use it. Historically, there's been many attempts to make it so we can use these devices with CAC or PIV cards and other external tokens, and these have been generally pretty cumbersome solutions at best and don't always lend themselves to the scenarios in which people want to use the phones. They don't want to have to carry around a charger for the phone and a charger for a Bluetooth CAC reader. They don't want to have to tether a device. They don't want to have big dongles hanging out of the bottom of the phone in order to use the device. Really annoying, and the usability stinks, and as probably most of you are aware, if it isn't usable, people aren't going to use it, and they're going to end up communicating insecurely just because that's what they need to do in order to get their jobs done. Some of these key stores will only store asymmetric keys. Some of them will store asymmetric and symmetric. A lot of them will store passwords, and at least one of them will let you store other stuff, you know, pretty much anything you want. Apple in particular, you'll see, you can see looking around the internet, some people are actually using the key store as a mechanism for inter-process communication just because it's a way to get information from one point to another. A little bit interesting. So have to do the obligatory XKCD cartoon, probably. I wish I had a dollar for every time this particular one has appeared at the conference. But for a long time, folks have known your data is only secure as the key. We've talked at other sessions here about attacking the algorithms and attacking the applications with malware. If you can't keep the key secure, you know, the algorithms are of no consequence. Attack the key, you got the answer. And if the key store is something that is, you know, get a guy to swipe his fingerprint or force him to type in his password or shoulder surf and capture the password, these passwords the keys are as good as compromised. Looking at the mobile environment in particular, this is a little different from the server sitting in a protected data center. Physical possession being 9/10 of the compromise, it's easy to get physical possession. And so a lot of these vendors have gone to extra lengths to try to make it so the keys are defended even if the phone is lost, stolen, whatever. So it's a nuance of this mobile reality we live in that we all have to be cognizant of. So the minimum functions we're looking at out of a key store is the ability to add or remove a key. Some, not all, key stores can actually generate the key inside the key store. A lot of cases, you're importing a PKCS12 file or something like that. Once you put it in there, you need to be able to find it. In some cases, you may want to or are required to export it. And when I say export, I mean bring private keys into the application space. Because, you know, this other bullet here, use key in a crypto operation, it would be great if the key store can actually use the key in a secure fashion. But a lot of them can't. They don't have cryptographic functions that will actually let them do encryption, do signing, do verification. They don't actually do these things inside the key store. So you end up exporting the key, using the private, and then hopefully erasing it and getting it out of the application space. Some of the key stores allow you to set ACLs, access control lists, on either the methods of the key store or on the keys that you're actually putting into the key store. Some of them let you say this key can only be accessed for 10 minutes after a user authentication to the device. Others say this key is permitted to be exposed on the device only when the device is unlocked. So we'll dive into that in a little bit. I alluded to this early in my intro here. There are no standard interfaces. Standard means on a lot of devices in most cases. There's PKCS11 standard. But the reality is there's maybe only one of these key stores that actually implements that in a way that's usable with the device key store. Otherwise, you're looking at, Android has the Java implementation with some special Android sauce. Apple has its keychain. BlackBerry has its own thing. Microsoft has its own thing. A couple of these are portable to desktop environments. You know, a lot of the JCA work is in fact cross-platform with, you know, some exceptions in terms of, well, major exceptions in terms of the implementation details of the key store. And MS CAPI and the various other interfaces exposed by Microsoft are fantastically cross-platform. Your mileage may vary here. So when you're doing a cross-platform development, what we do at CoolSpan is we've actually built our own crypto library that has a key store isolation layer. And that works for the most part. So where is this key store thing? In some cases, it's a file on the file system or a set of files on the file system, maybe a database. Hopefully, it's either inside or encrypted by a protected part of the device. A lot of devices today either have a generic trusted execution environment or a TEE. Almost all of the devices are running ARM processors and can make use of the ARM trust zone. In some cases, their key store is in a generic T inside trust zone. And in other cases, the OEM did a bare metal implementation of stuff inside the trust zone. And in the case of Microsoft products, they actually have a trusted platform module built into all of their different devices. You may be aware that, well, I've got a phone, it's got a SIM. That's like a smart card. Or in the case of the near field communication stuff being used for mobile payments, this is a secure element in a lot of devices. Typically, you can't touch them. They're very isolated. The SIM is on the other side of the radio interface on the phone. The NFC secure element is on the other side of the NFC. In some cases, they may have a path of communication that leads them to the ARM trust zone, but these are not typically accessible by user space program or even trusted apps you may be able to put into a TEE. That said, you know, implementation details across the board are pretty scarce, and it may very well be that in some cases an NFC secure element could be used as a root of trust to some of these other key store implementations, especially on like Apple or perhaps Samsung devices, but these are not details that they share. Looking at, so we talked about where the key store may be, how is it actually protected? A couple different things typically come into play here. Key store may be encrypted using a key derived from a user password, whether it's a password PIN or a pattern that you swipe on the screen. In some cases, it may be a fingerprint. For some of the options that you'll see in here later, it can be both, or only fingerprint. These different key stores have different access control options to let you dictate how the user's input will influence the key store. And then also on the different devices, most of the better enterprise-grade devices that are out there today are going to have a OS secure boot process with integrity checks on both the hardware, the firmware. They're going to make sure everything is good. And there is typically a hidden component in the hardware that is also used as part of a key derivation function for what the key store is actually protecting. And then there's lots of different options in terms of when the keys can be reached. In all cases, the keys are accessible when, well, if so configured, the keys are accessible when a device is unlocked. In some cases, that can be made more granular, where it can be within X number of minutes from when the user last authenticated to the device. It can be from the last time they authenticated to the device with a fingerprint, actually conveying the notion of user presence. And if your device is sitting there on a table unlocked for 30 minutes because you've got a long lock screen, or you've got it plugged in and it's configured to not lock while it's charging, some of these options will actually permit the key store to be locked unless you've actually touched the device and shown that you're there, that you had possession. Some keys can be available right after boot. And in virtually all cases where I've seen this discussed in documentation, documentation is really good about saying, this is dangerous. Be aware of what you're doing, because if you have a key that's accessible right after boot, we're not going to be held responsible for how well protected it is. These are the types of keys that are much more easily exposed. Devices turned on, keys available. The only mechanisms to protect that key must have been something about the OS, or maybe was nothing at all. It could be some T too easily exposed key. So that's something to watch out for. You know, a case, an example of this may be you reboot your phone. Don't expect your email to sync in the background if you're using a certificate-based login. Don't expect your email to sync until you've logged in the first time. There are actually access control lists here that let you say after first unlock in order to open up the keys. In the case of my company's product, Secure Voice Communication, you reboot the phone, you're not going to get a secure phone call until you've unlocked the phone at least once. So something to be aware of. And then to the same effect, there are keys and ACLs that will allow the keys to be exposed while the device is locked, perhaps sleeping. Sleep sync of email, incoming secure calls, these types of things. And the good news is there actually are ACLs for a lot of these things that let you lock down your keys to the maximum extent that makes sense for your product. This actually is where things get really interesting in comparing the different phones. Got keys in a key store? Who can get at it? And by who I mean, you know, my app, your app, this vendor, that vendor, native applications on the phone. In the case of Android devices, you look at container-based solutions. These are actually implemented as multi-user devices. There's the user that's the normal user of the phone, and then there may be a container solution. That's a second user. What keys can get across what user space? Multiple applications. You'll see, as I get into it here, some of these platforms allow all of the apps from my company to share keys. I can lock a key down so that it can only be this one app, or it can be this one app and then this other one that I produce. In some cases, we can also share keys between one vendor and basically everybody else on the phone. None of the solutions have key store ACLs that let me say, I want to have my company's apps use the key and this partner company over here use the keys. It's typically either all or nothing. It's either all of mine, all of his, or everybody on the device. So this can also lead to issues where, well, the only way I'm going to be able to share a key is to share it with everybody. And that may include a piece of malware on the phone that wants to use a key that I really didn't want to give it access to. So something to be aware of. I want to point out, this is actually a place where there's discussions and work underway for derived credentials. Talked about getting off of smart cards, getting off of these hardware tokens, and talking about cross-vendor solutions. If I get a phone, I don't necessarily want to use the email program built into the phone, the VPN built into the phone, and the web browser built into the phone, or the secure voice solution from here, or the other line of business application from over there. In the platforms where cross-application key sharing, cross-vendor key sharing just doesn't exist, that may mean if you're going to put a derived credential on that device, you may have to put it on N times for each vendor that wants to give access to it. There's a program, maybe some of you may be aware, there's a program being worked on by DISA called Purebred for iPhone, that their goal is to actually try to make it so a single derived credential can get onto a device and then shared to multiple applications. These are workarounds that are being done to try to manipulate or manage the solution. And it's it would be great if we didn't have to do that, but you got to do what you got to do. So how do they compare? And the answer is, well, it's really complicated. In some cases, we're really talking about an apples and oranges situation. Completely different approaches to the problem. So while I may say one thing about one platform and another thing about the other thing, it's not like there's one table that could be created to say, well, this one has this, as opposed to the same implementation over here. It's not quite like that. In a lot of cases, it's more like this, where you know, there's those guys, and then there's the everybody else who's doing that. And in the case of Android, it's made even worse, because you've got Samsung and LG and HTC and BlackBerry, and everybody has their own little twist on how this is done. All right. And the other thing is in some cases, the public details are really sketchy. There's the highly publicized APIs, and Apple has their how we do security, and Microsoft has their how we do security, and Samsung has theirs. But when you get down to the implementation details, you know, okay, well, great, you're exposing this crypto. Is it, and you've got a FIPS library. Is that key store using that FIPS library? Is this ACL relevant to that key? If I do a fingerprint swipe on this device, is that actually somehow cryptographically bound with the hardware where the key is stored? In some cases, this information is very clear and presented well. In other cases, there's nuances and wide open to interpretation. And in some cases, you know, this is putting this together, looking around the internet, there's as many opinions as there are analysts looking at the problem. How does the Apple Secure Enclave work? Well, pick an opinion. And they can be pretty widely divergent. The other issue here is the market fragmentation. Of course, not as much of an issue on the iOS side. Apple has full control of the phone platform. Really, all of the more recent devices, ever since iPhone 5S, have a pretty consistent set of core security functions. There are nuances there, especially around iOS 9 and iOS 8. A lot more interesting security capabilities in iOS 9, and keys are very well defended. On the Android side, it's all over the place. Marshmallow was released last year, but it's only on, 7.5% of the devices. And a lot of the older devices will probably never be upgraded. What that means for me as an application developer, if I want to make use of the new functions in Marshmallow, I actually have to do some really complicated programming gymnastics in my code, or almost have two different versions of my application. There are abilities to recognize what version of the OS you're on and call APIs appropriately, but that's where code turns into spaghetti, you end up with a testing scenario that is incredibly scary. So you can either write to your lowest common denominator, which KitKat, 3-4 years old at this point, or you can have an old version and a new version and test twice. And this can get really expensive. So diving into some platform detail. Android actually has two different APIs, Key Store and Key Chain. Key Store is focused on a specific app or keys that are exposed to all of the apps for a specific vendor. The Key Chain, on the other hand, has global visibility. In the Marshmallow version, there were some details shared that Keychain is actually using Keystore as its underlying implementation. It's easy to see in some of the older versions how the keys are actually stored. They're files in the file system. Root the device, you can go look at the files. Older devices, for the older versions of the operating system, there's lots of information out on the internet on how to decrypt these files when they're not hardware backed, talking in great detail about how they're structured. This encryption can vary widely depending upon if you've got a hardware backed or a TEE to protect the keys, or if it's just going to be based on whatever password the user swiped. I already talked all that other stuff there. All right, so the key store as we know it today was basically introduced back in Android Jelly Bean, going back a number of years this year. And that's actually where Android first took into consideration the notion of a hardware-backed key store. And an API was added at that point that this is-bound key type. It's interesting. It isn't a, is my key in a hardware-backed key store? It's actually designed, is this type of encryption something that would get put in a hardware-backed key store? So you call is-bound type RSA, and it'll tell you, yeah, if you give me an RSA key, I'll put it in a hardware-based key store. So that's interesting, potentially useful, but they deprecated this API in Marshmallow. And there's no clear explanation I've seen for this. My only guess is that in Android, Marshmallow, we'll see on the next page, major work done to make it so all keys are in a hardware-backed key store. And so this would really be by exception. It's only deprecated, it's not removed, so you could still probably call it, but it's an interesting twist. In Android KitKat, introduced a couple more key types, a little more SE Linux, which is basically protections on the operating system itself, a little more SE Linux protection on the operating system, and thus helping the security of the key store. And then Android Lollipop, more operating system level protection, and AES-GCM was added with TLS. Android Marshmallow is a pretty major update, and you can't call it equivalent to iPhones with their secure enclave. This is really an apples and oranges thing. The most awesome thing about Marshmallow is that it is in fact designed from the ground up to make it so keys can be used without exporting them from the key store. Everything is hardware backed, symmetric, asymmetric. You can use it inside the key store. The crypto actually calls on keys using them by reference in the key store itself, which you'll see is pretty significantly different from iPhone. They also added a whole bunch of new key generation parameters, all of them optional, but if you're really concerned about the security of your application or security of your keys, or you have nuances to when your keys need to be accessible, you may want to be making use of these. Some of these are very reminiscent of parameters that can be set in PKCS 11. Can this key be used for encrypt and decrypt, or sign and verify, or one or the other of any of these? Interesting things that perhaps basic users of crypto wouldn't care so much about, but when we get into more security conscious implementations, you may want to dictate this key can only be used for this function. And now that's actually built into the key generation process. And it will not let you use the key in the other way. Other cryptographic parameters like the block mode and the padding, and these are actually stored with the key and made mandatory. There were also ACLs put in, the ability to set ACLs on authentication on a per-key basis, authentication parameters on a per-key basis. This key requires user authentication within 5 minutes. This one within 10 minutes, unlocked, whatever. And whether a passcode is required, fingerprints okay, on boot, lots of pretty wide spectrum of options. And then also the ability to do crypto operations on potentially arbitrarily sized chunks of data using a start, update, finish paradigm for actually executing the crypto operation. And again, the most awesome thing here is the stuff's all done within a protected space. You didn't have to bubble the keys up to application space. So some gotchas on Android. Older devices, Jelly Bean, KitKat, if the key store is protected by the screen lock, whether your password, PIN, whatever, if you switch from password to PIN or password to pattern, that transition across the software that implements that key lock didn't do anything with the keys that were actually derived from that password. It's like you're running a whole different program. This program, my keys are under this program, now my keys are under this program. New program doesn't know how to deal with the keys from the old program. Your key store will get destroyed without warning. So the newer versions of Android, as the last couple of versions have bubbled up, their solution was to add warnings, or in some cases force you, not let you do the transition without clearing the key store on your own. You want to unset, or you want to move from password to PIN? Oh, clear your credentials first, then we'll let you. Meaning you're going to then have to reload everything. And then most recently, there's a bug, it's probably a minor one, in Android M, that ACLs are enforced on public keys that may not necessarily have really needed that. All right, iOS key store. The main interface on iOS is something called a keychain. Very flexible in terms of what you can actually put in the key store. You can put in passwords, keys, certificates, blobs. In some cases on the password size, it gets nuanced in terms of, plain old passwords and internet passwords, where that password is associated with a specific host. Makes it so it's fairly well protected if you have a password sharing application. It's built into the application, which is both a pro and a con. The key store is actually implemented as a database on the file system. Apple's security document says it's protected with AES GCM 128, but then they also talk about the device file system being protected with AES 256, and it's not clear if this is 128 on top of the 256 or 128 instead of the 256, but I find it a little bit interesting that they're only using 128 for these potentially sensitive keys, so I'm kind of hoping that it's a couple layers. It may very well be, since it's probably two different programs. iOS has a really excellent ACL mechanism for giving access to the different keys. There's an access group where you can say that this key can only be used by my program or all of the programs from my company. There's an excellent accessibility set of attributes. When can I get it, within X minutes of a password, or when unlocked, or when the device boots, and then also an access control that lets you dictate what type of auth. The APIs are pretty minimal. You can add an item, you can update an item, you can pull information out, you can delete it. You can generate keys within the key store, but from what I can see, with one exception, you still have to extricate the keys in order to do cryptographic operations on them. You are going to call an encrypt function where the key is going to be extricated from the key store. Spoke of a lot of different protection attributes here on the keys. I want to highlight a couple. Here's an example of a platform that will let you access the keys after the first unlock. So the keys, protected until the user logs in for the very first time. And this is recommended for services that have to run in the background, like an email sleep sync or secure voice or whatever. All of the ACLs on iPhone or iOS have two flavors. We have this after first unlock and after first unlock this device only. And this differentiates between what keys from your key store are going to get synced to iCloud or iTunes when you do a backup. So heads up, your keys get exported during a backup and you can make it so this key can only be restored to this device only when it's restored. If I can remember the nuance here, I believe if you specify the this device only option, it's not going to iCloud sync, but it could iTunes sync, and it'll only get restored on that same device. The default ACL is when only access the keys when the device is unlocked, but the key can be backed up to iCloud. Doesn't have that little device only nuance. And then in iOS 8, there was this is not one that has a this device only, not this device only version. You can only access this key when a password is set on a device. So that implies to me, and this was not clear, if the device is unlocked, that doesn't necessarily mean you ever set a password on the device. With this particular ACL, you have to have set a password in order for the key to have been created and then subsequently accessed. If you remove the password, the key will get removed, or at the very least, access to the key will get removed. Secure enclave, secure enclave. Lots of talk about the secure enclave. It's actually pretty interesting to see what the secure enclave cannot do. This is, I think, a very significant difference between Marshmallow and iOS 9. The enclave has its own key store place. In Apple's documentation, you won't see anywhere, or I wasn't able to find any place that said the secure enclave is running in ARM Trust Zone. But it sure looks like it. Talk about a unique purpose security built ARM special processor place, coprocessor where the security functions run. Everything is pointing to Trust Zone. So there is this key store capability running over there in the enclave, probably as a trusted app in the enclave. Touch ID, the fingerprint processor for the iPhone, also has a component in there, and there's pieces also that talk to the near-field communication stuff. The bad news here is the secure enclave is in fact not used to store all the keys from what I can tell. I think the secure enclave is used as a key source for encrypting the rest of the key store, but the keys are not actually in there and used in there. With this is the one exception. You can generate a elliptic curve P256 key, a P256 key. Well, actually, you can probably do any number you want. But you can generate a P256 key, and it'll get stored in the enclave, and you can sign, and you can verify. That's it. An annoying thing here is if you create the key, you must then make sure you pull out and protect the public key, which is a complicated process. They've done this in a very non-standard fashion. You want to be able to hold on to that public key. You've got to pull it out. If the device gets powered off after you do this, that public key is gone. So if you choose to do this, make sure you do that. The scenario laid out as an example for using this is typically a challenge and response. You know, is this my device? Is this the same device that I was using the last time I talked to this server? Getting tight on time here, rush through some of this. There's some nuances around ACLs for Touch ID. Only allow access if I have not changed what fingerprints are enrolled with Touch ID. So somebody can't take your device while it's unlocked, add their fingerprint, give it back to you, and then subsequently get access to your device. If this is set, and if somebody changes the Touch ID credentials, the key is gone. That's kind of cool. There's also the ability to add an application password. So all the password encryption of the key store functionality that's built into the phone, if you are not comfortable with that, and if you want to say your application has its own way of protecting a key, maybe it's coming down from a server, you can set an application password on a key and encrypt it that way. Talked about the keychain. Do you know where your keys are? They're probably synced. So watch out for that. There is a way to disable that. Can't share the keys between apps from different vendors. You have to come up with complicated solutions for sharing the keys, or maybe installing them once for each app from each different vendor. There's a bug still. It's been in iOS for a while, still in iOS, the current version of iOS 9. If there's too many apps loaded into the phone at the same time, making the device feel memory pressure, they call it, you can lose access to your keys. The solution is to close a bunch of apps. You know, if authentication failed, close a bunch of apps or reboot the phone. Still a problem. And also be aware that at least on iOS, you uninstall your application, your keys are probably still there. Watch out for that if you go to get installed again. You may have to, before you create keys, look to see if your old keys are still there. All right, Windows Phone. Windows Phone is going to get a little short shrift here. It probably has some of the coolest crypto functions, some of the most portable crypto functions, fantastic list of algorithms, but a very small installed base. Two different ways of doing a key store, the credential locker. It's more typical of some of the other platforms, and then a virtual smart card that really just acts just like a smart card. Excellent thing about the smart card, it's built really heavily founded on the TPM. BlackBerry Key Store, this is really easy. There is none that you can use unless you're doing the native email, VPN, or the browser. There's a secure password store. Hopefully will be getting fixed in a forthcoming release. Android-based Priv, it's pretty solid. There's other options. We're off the mobile phones, but there's other things we could do. We can come back to smart cards and do tethering, or you can use secure micro SD devices, typically PKCS11 interfaces or tightly bound smart card interfaces. But you're still getting back on the iOS platform, the dongles that hang off the bottom or special sleeves that are impossible for vendors to maintain. So fragmentation makes this tough. The different platforms are in fact very different in terms of what they do. It's tough to write apps, and The good news is things are moving in a positive direction. Each new release of the OS is providing a lot more capability and strength. And you can see this when you get the slides if you want them, and thanks very much.
Do we have any questions for Bill? I know we're running out of time, but we could take one question if you have anything burning. Excellent. So Bill did a great job.
One quick burning question. When you actually, on Apple, back up that key store for the keys that are allowed to be backed up in whatever setting you're using, how are those keys protected?
They're typically protected with the... They're protected with the key, the same encryption that they enjoyed while they were still on the device. And then if there's additional encryption on top of that. Yeah. Thanks.
Excellent. Let's give Bill a big hand.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Go to the
yes,
and then G11B.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I'll get your